Now, Western Wisconsin's rural counties have gotten more political attention in the 4 years since they helped Donald Trump win the state and the presidency, some areas voting Republican for the first time in decades. While the area is now on the map for campaigns, issues like farm closures, trade uncertainty, and a rising number of suicides are still part of the daily reality for people living there. Our next guest spent time talking to farmers in the Driftless area about what it's meant for their lives and their outlook on politics. Dan Kaufman is a contributor to The New Yorker and author of the book The Fall of Wisconsin, The Conservative Conquest of a Progressive Bastion and the Future of American Politics. He's a Wisconsin native and traveled back there for his latest story. Dan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, Wisconsin, as we know, can swing a presidential election, could do it this year. And the part of your state, part of the state that you focused on here, could swing Wisconsin. Talk about how important this is.
Well, I think it's hugely important. The Driftless area, as probably many of your listeners know, has remained largely Democratic long past the time that many other rural places in the U.S. had trended Republican. And it was key to John Kerry's narrow victory in 2004, key to Michael Dukakis's narrow victory in Wisconsin in 1988. And it was also key to Donald Trump's victory in 2016, and it has begun to change, but it's also was key to Tony Evers' narrow victory over Scott Walker in 2018. So it's still very much up for grabs. It has a unique history, unique topography, and unique kind of agricultural history that sort of is intertwined with its political history. So I think it's hugely important. Yeah.
That agricultural history is at the heart of the story and of your story. Can you give us a thumbnail view over how agriculture has evolved and changed there and why it's important politically?
Well, I think you've seen a really rapid consolidation of dairy farming, which was sort of the last person standing as far as the survival of the family farm model on a wide scale. And over the past 5 years, milk prices really collapsed in 2015 and have remained low. And that has really put the crunch on smaller farmers who are already under tremendous pressure to get big or get out, in the famous words of Earl Butz, the former Secretary of Agriculture. So this has caused a lot of tension, a lot of pain, a lot of mental health issues, and a kind of erosion of a way of life that has been prevalent there for decades, more than 100 years in some places. So I think it's a profound change, and it has a political effect. You're seeing a lot of rural counties become more and more depopulated, rural schools closing, and so on. And there's a lot of desperation, and sometimes that desperation takes form in a kind of resentment towards Madison or towards more successful areas economically. And I think that's kind of what's been happening there. And this consolidation is really, really accelerated. Wisconsin led the country in family farm bankruptcies over the past 3 years, and in 2017 set a statewide record for suicides. So I think all of that is part of the context, the political context that's playing out right now.
Some of the biggest swings I know from counties that voted for Barack Obama to counties that voted to Donald Trump were in this part of Wisconsin. You talked to some farmers there about their thinking going into 2016 and now in 2020. What were some of the things you heard that accounted for candidate Donald Trump's success in the region?
Well, I think there was like a real frustration. One farmer in particular, Jerry Valenit, was somebody that had voted for Obama twice and then voted for Trump, not with a great enthusiasm, but he was frustrated at kind of his eroding position. He describes in the piece how, you know, when he started out, he was working less hard 25 years ago and making more money than he is now. Now he says, I'm barely paying myself living expenses. And his grandfather, for example, had a herd of about 16 cows and was able to survive, feed his family, provide for them in the 50s and 60s off of a herd of that size. And Jerry has a herd of 330 and is barely hanging on. So I think there was a lot of frustration that went into that vote. Different people responded differently. Another protagonist in the piece, Randy Roker, also voted for Trump, but had voted for Obama in 2008 and remains committed to Trump. I think Jerry has become enormously frustrated with Trump and swung wildly differently. In fact, he supported Bernie Sanders in the primary. But I think everyone's response is different, but there is a lot of pain and frustration in this area. And I think it will be pivotal to how the state will finally decide, you know, in November.
Talking to Dan Kaufman about his piece in The New Yorker on driftless Wisconsin, the rural area of Wisconsin that swung from Barack Obama voters to Donald Trump voters. The dairy farming, that's a big part of that state. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you part of this story in a swing part of the state, of a swing state that could swing the election? Call in at 800-642-1234. Dan, you heard some people rethinking what they want to see when it comes to policy on agriculture, on dairy in particular. What kind of things did you hear?
Well, it runs the gamut. But, you know, actually, interestingly, across the board, the farmers, including both Randy, who supports Trump, and Jerry, who no longer does, they both support what's called supply management, which is what they have in Canada and essentially what they had during the New Deal period and for the decades after it. Really, the last vestiges were eliminated in the mid-90s. But basically, the government would control more of the production. A big problem for farmers is overproduction of milk is causing prices to be low. And this has been a problem for decades, that the American system of agriculture really encourages people to produce more and more until essentially you almost have kind of the last person standing. And this consolidation in the last 10 years, Wisconsin has lost half of its dairy farms, and yet it's producing more milk than ever. It has roughly the same number of cows. So what you're seeing is bigger and bigger farms and more on the corporate farming model. And that has a real implications for not only the people involved that are going out, but the ecological state of Wisconsin. When you have this concentration, it can really pollute groundwater much more heavily and cause other kinds of ecological problems. And that is happening. You see in Kewaunee County, where a lot of the drinking water is no longer drinkable, a lot of the wells and so on. And this has happened in other places in Wisconsin where there's a dense concentration of dairy farms. And I think that is all part. It's a complex problem that has been going on for decades. And both parties have really kind of encouraged this sort of get big or get out model over the decades.
Another part of that story we've seen here in Wisconsin with dairy, and I know other states have it with their crop of choice. As this concentration happens, it requires fewer people to do it. And we see some of these communities being depopulated. You write about schools closing. Can you talk about the exodus of people from some of these rural communities?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's a new report, I think, by Forward Analytics about 2/3 of Wisconsin's rural counties have lost population in the last decade. It has major sociological effects on the people that remain. You're seeing a lot of small businesses in the driftless, which had kind of endured for a lot longer than in other parts of rural America, partly because of this smaller scale farming that persisted and still does persist to a degree there. It has a lot of organic farms, but it's really coming under pressure. So I think you're seeing these kinds of problems, including mental health problems, suicides. You have to remember, you know, for a farmer, it's not just if their farm goes out, it's not just losing their job. It's also their home. And it might be their home for five generations, or like Jerry's home. You know, I mean, he's still going, but it's a really strong, visceral emotional attachment. And I think a lot of them feel a sense of profound failure, even though they're competing against forces that are far beyond their control if they are the one that loses the farm. So all of these things play into it. And this depopulation is having a profound effect on these rural areas and the frustration and the struggles that these people are going through, and also the politics of the area.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Jan is with us in Viroqua. Jan, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Jan?
I just wanted to tell you that you had mentioned that there were a lot of people that voted for Barack Obama and then they switched over to Trump. And I think it's still going on here because I've been driving around the county, Crawford County and Vernon County, all afternoon. And I see about 35, 40 signs that say Trump Pence and two signs that say Biden.
Jan, thanks for the call. An informal road survey. Dan, what do you make of that? At least some visible support there for Donald Trump.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of support for Trump that endures in these areas. It's always hard to tell from things like signs, but it's not nothing. It does signify something. And one of the farmers I talked to, Randy Roker, he supports Trump still. He also supports supply management, but he and his family are strong Trump supporters. And I think that does endure. I think the question is whether the Democrats will make inroads in the rural areas. I don't think anyone's thinking they will win them, but if they offset the margin, it would probably shift the election because Donald Trump kind of underperformed in the collar counties of Milwaukee, the WOW counties, which is a traditional Republican stronghold. And what he really offset that with was massive margins in rural Wisconsin. So I think it's really key which way the Driftless goes in particular, because his support is really strong in the Northwoods and in other parts of rural Wisconsin. But in the Driftless, it's more mixed. And you saw Tony Evers won about half of the Driftless counties in 2018 en route to a narrow victory over Scott Walker. So it's really kind of ground zero for Wisconsin, which is the state that's kind of the most pivotal in some ways in the entire country.
We're talking to Dan Kaufman, Wisconsin native and contributor to The New Yorker, about his latest story looking into the political mood in western Wisconsin's rural areas. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you work in agriculture, how has your work, your way of life, affected the way you look at politics? Have you felt overlooked by one party, by both parties? Have you voted for candidates from different parties in different elections? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Dan Kaufman, contributor to The New Yorker, about his latest story that brought him back to his home state to look into the political mood in rural western Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Are you in the Driftless area yourself? Are you a farmer in any part of the state? What are your thoughts on what you've seen from a Trump presidency, on what you see from both parties, either party, when it comes to agriculture and policies related to farming? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go back to your calls now. Kelly is with us in Cascade. Kelly, hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So I live in Sheboygan County, and I'm a part of a group of progressive women called She Persists, which is based out of Washington County. I'm a progressive voter. We are small hobby farmers, and I'm surrounded by people with Trump signs. I feel a little reluctant to put out a sign, as do many of the women in our group. But there's a bunch of us out there, and I think the number in our group, She Persists, keeps growing. So I just want to be a voice for the progressive women of Washington, Sheboygan counties, and totally support, you know, policies that support our farmers. And it's heartbreaking to see the small farms dwindle away, because it's one of the huge charms of our landscape here in Wisconsin.
Kelly, thanks a lot for that call. So Kelly, seeing herself as a progressive farmer, Dan, with a different model, a smaller scale model of farming. Are there a lot of people out there still like that?
I think there's a growing, there's a lot of young people that are doing that kind of farming. I was at the Wisconsin Farmers Union convention in February, and there were many young couples, young families doing this kind of farming. I think they're struggling to figure out how to make the economics work for them, but I think they're coming up with some creative ideas. And also, just to comment on what she said, I have heard that elsewhere, that some people that are Democrats or Biden supporters are reluctant to put out signs out of fear. So that may be throwing off the perception of, you know, the mood in rural areas. But I don't know, but I have heard that anecdotally from a few people.
Kelly, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Peter joins us now in Minnesota. Peter, hi. Peter, are you there? We lost Peter. Peter says, got a note from our producer. Peter says, I'm a dairy farmer in the driftless part of Minnesota. Peter says they've lost most of their dairy farms since Trump came into office. And Peter makes the case that people are disillusioned with the president. Is that something you've heard? Obviously, Dan, from what you said, not from all farmers. Have you heard that sense of disillusionment that Peter brings up?
Absolutely, yes. I think the trade wars in particular have caused a lot of pain for them. Even farmers, they question the kind of export-driven focus. I think it's had a big impact. And Jerry was a good example of somebody that was not a passionate Trump supporter to start with, but is a passionate kind of anti-Trump voter now. So I think that is true. I think his standing has eroded, and I think he's aware of it. He's given a lot of money to farmers for COVID and also in compensation for the trade wars. Most of that money has gone to the largest farms, however, so it very, very little of it trickles down. In fact, one farmer told me, a small farmer told me it was about enough money to pay for 2 weeks of feed for his cattle. It was really inconsequential. So I think you're seeing this dynamic play out again. The big farms are the ones that are receiving most of the benefit of the whatever policy the government is implementing.
Let's go to Joyce now with us in Medford. Joyce, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to comment. I'm used to be a dairy farmer for 28 years in Wisconsin, and we had the same struggles as all the other dairy farmers. Things keep getting bigger and bigger. We keep getting smaller and smaller. You know, I'm vacillating between I want to vote for Trump because despite what all the news media says, he actually does have a plan. And it is actually a plan that if it goes through would help us. But on the other hand, I really hate voting for Trump because personally, he's an idiot. I mean, he says things that get people inflamed, and that's not the way I feel personally that I would want to have my government officials do. So I'm torn.
I want to ask which part of President Trump's plans do you see potentially helping dairy farmers like you used to be?
You know, how many years were we trying to tell the government officials that the trade deals definitely threw agriculture under the bus? And so when Trump was trying to renegotiate the trade deals, he was addressing that. He was doing exactly what we in the agriculture field had said we needed him to do.
Got it. Joyce, thank you so much for calling in. And Joyce is not alone in seeing President Trump's kind of hardball tactics on trade ultimately benefiting farmers, Dan.
Yeah, that is a common thread. Randy Roker said something very similar. I would urge listeners to look at the fine print on the renegotiated deal. It's a very NAFTA deal. It's a very, very modest increase in exports allowed into Canada, of roughly $70 million, perhaps less, depending on how you calculate it. But there is a lot of support for his the sense that these trade deals have hurt farmers, and they have. They absolutely have hurt small farmers. There's more than 200,000 fewer small farmers in the United States than before NAFTA was signed. There's been increasing consolidation. A lot of large agribusinesses, like their counterparts in the auto industry, have moved production to Mexico, particularly in the meat industry. So I think the caller is absolutely right that these trade deals have hurt. I don't see the Trump administration's policy as being all that different than what has preceded it. There is a lot of noise around renegotiating them, but the results are not all that different.
Thanks a lot for the call, Joyce. And Dan, that's all the time we have. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, it was a pleasure, Rob. I'm always happy to be on Wisconsin Public Radio, a stalwart of my childhood. So thanks a lot.
Wonderful. Dan Coffin is a Wisconsin native and a contributor to The New Yorker. Talk about his recent piece on farming and politics in Western Wisconsin.